Thanks for tuning into Americana Music Profiles. The next episode starts right now.
You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. Tim Rabin began his musical career while playing with his dad and brothers in the family band, the American Bluegrass Express, when Tim was only 11 years old. He went on from there to become the lead singer for the house band in one of the hottest nightclubs in the country called The Barn. In 1997, a reunion with his brother Marty netted them a CMA nomination for Duo of the Year. In 2019, Tim emerged on the bluegrass scene with his popular group Merle Monroe and is now enjoying success with his new venture, the Tim Rabin Band, with hits like Hello Sunshine and I'm Leaving Town Tonight. Tim is my guest on this edition of Americana Music Profiles. Hi, Tim. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you, Greg. It's great to be with you today.
Thanks for taking the time to chat with us. Do I have a writer? Am I speaking to you from Nashville or somewhere around there?
Yes, I live in Nashville. I've been here about 30 years.
Okay. Wow. That's not originally home, though, is that right? You grew up in Florida?
I did. I grew up in a little town north of Orlando, a little town called Sanford, Florida. So I was born and raised central Florida.
Okay. And if I got my notes right, you got involved in bluegrass pretty quick as a young
we
boy.
We did. You know, I have a brother that is actually a lead singer with a country group, Shenandoah.
Yeah.
He's been with them the whole time. His name is Marty. And he and I, and we had another brother, Rick. Unfortunately, he passed away a couple of years ago. And our dad played fiddle in our band. We had a bluegrass band back. We probably started in the mid-70s, and then it ended somewhere in the early 80s.
Okay.
That's the time that Marty left to come to Nashville. And then I went on to college and then just kind of piddled around a little bit with music. Then I finally moved up here. In early 93, RCA Records was looking at me as an artist, and so I moved up to pursue that.
Okay. Did you continue playing music in college at all?
Well, I didn't. Unfortunately, I wasn't very good at college, so I didn't stay in very long. But now I can brag about that because all the great people like Steve Jobs and, you know, people like him, you know, quit college early too. So I said, well, you know, I'm like them, but
there you go.
Of course, I'm nothing like them. But anyway, college really wasn't for me. I grew up in the construction business with my dad.
Okay.
And then, of course, on the weekends, we would play music.
Uh-huh.
But then I just kind of got married, got out of music for a while. And then, in the late 80s and early 90s, when the new country, the new country then, which
sure
would be the 90s country now,
right,
was just kind of exploding. I just got the bug back again. And then I auditioned for a large nightclub there in Sanford, Florida called The Barn.
Mm-hmm.
And what's iconic about The Barn is that's where Garth Brooks started off his very first tour, was at The Barn in Sanford,
cool,
Florida.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, on his second album, he talks about The Barn, where he started his first tour.
Okay.
You know, anyway, I was the lead singer there until about 94, 95, and maybe 94, and then I moved up here.
Was that?
And I was going back and forth.
In a house band?
Yes, I was. We were called the Barn Burners, of all names. It's called The Barn. We call the Barn Burners.
You're right.
But we had it was a huge nightclub there, probably the largest, probably in Florida, maybe the Southeast.
Wow.
And the gentleman that owned it, he had a lot of money, so he would bring in a lot of the top artists. I mean, Hagar would come, Jones came there, Tammy Wynette, I mentioned Garth, and then everybody else, that was anybody, came to The Barn and performed.
And that was country music, right, that you were performing
it
at that time? Yeah, okay.
It was, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you and your brother Marty got together. Did you play in Shenandoah, or did you guys play on the side after that?
I didn't. But here's what happened. I was just struggling. RCA never signed me to a deal.
Mm-hmm.
But I was a demo singer here in town, and then the producer Don Cook, who produced Brooks and Dunn, the Mavericks, mm-hmm. Wade Hayes, Highway 101, and Shenandoah at the time. He knew that Marty at that time was probably looking for a change, and he and Marty talked in length about it. He said, "Listen, I would love to put a new duo together, kind of like what we did with Kix Brooks and Ronnie Dunn."
Yeah.
And he said, "You think your brother would be up for it?" And I just flat out turned it down. I just thought, I'm not interested in that at all. Then a year later, Don Cook called me back. He says, "Hey, what's going on in your world?" And I said, "Absolutely nothing." He said, "You ready to go to work?" And I said, "Yeah, I think I'm ready now." and the irony of that, Greg, is at that time, Bob Carlisle
had
the song Butterfly Kisses out on the Adult Contemporary.
Right.
And the guy that heads up Universal Music out in California called Tony Brown up, who was the president of CEO of MCA, and then Bruce Hinton was the chairman. They called them up and said, "Listen, we need an artist at MCA, and we want Butterfly Kisses cut very soon." You know, George Strait was at MCA. He wouldn't do it. Vince Gill wouldn't do it. The Mavericks couldn't do it. They had Tracy Byrd. They didn't feel he could do it. Tony Brown told the gentleman at Universal, he says, "Well, we're getting ready to sign in the fall." This was in late May. He said, "But in the fall, we're getting ready to sign Marty Raven with Shenandoah and his brother. We're going to do a new duo called the Raven Brothers." He said, "Sign them this week. I want that song out before the end of the month."
Hmm.
Now, what's interesting about that, so we go in and we only cut Butterfly Kisses. That's the only song we cut. This is 1997. And at that time, digital radio was very new.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as they were mixing it down, the next day we cut it, and the next day they're mixing it, mastering and mixing it. Bruce Hinton walks in and says, "Greg, this was on Tuesday." I will never forget this because we were all shocked. Even Tony Brown and Don Cook were shocked. He said, "This will be at every radio station Thursday morning."
Wow.
We thought, well, how's that possible?
Yeah.
He said, "We're going to satellite this song in to every radio station in America and the world."
Wow.
And in 3 weeks, we had a gold record.
Wow. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
did you guys do more after that? Or did you put an album together as the Raven Brothers?
We did, yeah. We had a few more singles. Matter of fact, we cut a single with Olivia Newton-John. It was an old LeBlanc and Carr song called "I'm Falling."
Hmm.
That they had out in the very early 70s. Lenny LeBlanc had it with LeBlanc and Carr.
Yeah.
And we recut it with Olivia Newton-John. It actually did pretty well for us, but it wasn't a huge hit. And then soon after that, they dropped us from the label. We still haven't figured that out, but nonetheless, that happened. Then I decided to kind of get out of music. And that was in the beginning of 1998.
Wow. Okay.
Then in 2000, but then in 2000, Marty called me up and says, "Listen, I'm going to cut a bluegrass record." I said, "Great. That's where we cut our teeth on."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "I want you to come and sing background vocals on my record." So I did. And then again, Greg, it's kind of a funny thing. It just kind of got the bug again because I kind of quit playing music for a while. And then when he cut the bluegrass record, that kind of got the bug for bluegrass then. And then it just kind of stuck with me then.
I remember that album because I remember thinking that guy's voice sounds really familiar. I hadn't put two and two together yet to realize that, you know. And then I think if it wasn't on the album, I saw him and he covered one of the Shenandoah tunes bluegrass style. And I thought, okay,
yeah,
that's
you next to me.
Yeah, that's it. Yep. And I thought that's how I know that guy's voice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's awesome. So you played with him for a while then.
I did. I was a fill-in for him because I was a businessman. Now I'm a businessman in town. Mm-hmm. I was with a large real estate company here in town. for 21 years. And I was early in my career, so I didn't want to let that go.
Mm-hmm.
Music is great. I love it. But it can be a bitter friend. It can bite you if you're not careful.
Sure,
so
yeah.
I just stuck with being a businessman. Then I would just help him out. If he had an album, I would sing background vocal on it. Or if his bass player was out, I would fill in for him. Or if his fiddle player was out, I would fill in for him.
Mm-hmm.
But I never really was part of his band,
mm-hmm.
Full Circle Band.
Mm-hmm.
But Marty and I are very, very close. And even to this day, we're just very, very close. And he's actually cut a couple of my songs that I've written for him, for his solo project. He had a new record come out the middle part of last year, and I wrote 2 number one songs for him. And I was very and he's hard to write for. People think he's a shoe-in for me, and he's not. He is very. I have sent this guy probably 500 songs, and he's turned me down 498 times.
Wow.
he just got the last two I sent him. But he's tough. So
when did you get the songwriting bug?
Yeah, so you know, so when I came to town back in the early 90s, I signed with a publishing company. But you know how that goes. They they'll sign a potential artist knowing they're not a great writer, only because if they get a deal, they know they can put them in great writers and they could, you know, collaborate and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And then that'd be the publishing house way of making money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they did that with me, but I knew nothing about songwriting, and I was horrible at it. I would sit there and watch people write a song. I thought, oh, that's how you do it. Okay. And so I didn't do a whole lot of songwriting. But in 2018, I started a band called Merle Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
And I had not written anything since the middle 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And so... I didn't really think about writing. So we had an album coming out in March of the following year. Now we're in November of 2018, but it won't be March until we have our album come out. And one of the guys in the band said, hey, listen, why don't we cut a Christmas record and kind of introduce ourselves? And then that way, our first single that comes out, people kind of know who we are.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a brilliant idea.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, think about a classic, you know, Christmas song, or heck, write one. Well, he was flippant. He didn't really mean that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I like a challenge, and thought, I was like, oh, okay. Well, over the next day or so, I wrote this song. And I sent it to the label head, Ethan Burkhart, who heads up Pinecastle
sure,
Records.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And Ethan said, who wrote that? I said, I did. He said, you're kidding me. I said, no. He said, are you a writer? I said, well...
I guess so.
Well, if you qualify one song, I guess, yes, I am, I guess. But I said, no, I think I just lucked up. He goes, well, this is great. It's not hokey, yet traditional, but not hokey.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I think this is great. That's a great idea. Get it mastered, send it to us, and we'll release it right at Christmas or right before Christmas. And so we did.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we were not quite finished with the record. We were going to finish it in January, February, and then come out with it in March. And I wound up writing 5 songs on our first freshman project,
mm-hmm.
and they did very, very well for us. And I was shocked. Anybody that knew me was shocked, but they never saw me as a songwriter. I never saw myself as a songwriter.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And then on our sophomore record, you know, that's always where the pressure is.
Right.
You got to follow up.
Right.
Follow that up. I probably wrote 10 of the 12 songs on that record, and 4 of them were number one songs.
Is that the
so
one?
I was elated.
Is that what? Which one is the one that "Hello Sunshine" came off of?
Yeah, that song I wrote, "Hello Sunshine."
Yeah,
I wrote "God Still in Control," and then I wrote "Leaving Town Tonight." And then I then we had "Goodbye Marie" that went number one for us. That was a Dennis Lindy song.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have one more song on there that I wrote that was number one, I believe. Anyway, that was a blowout record for us, and that really introduced us. Matter of fact, that got us so much exposure that I got a letter from Merle Haggard's widow saying that we got to stop using the name Merle Monroe.
Oh, really?
Or else.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, I didn't really want my name out front. I never wanted the Tim Raven band. That's why I picked Merle Monroe. But
uh-huh.
We didn't want to fight them. They had probably had a right to make us change it, so we did. we were not trying to infringe upon Merle Haggard. We were trying to just mix country, a little bit of country with bluegrass,
sure,
and just
yeah.
kind of making a hybrid, somewhat like what the Osborne Brothers did and many of the other artists have
right,
done
right.
throughout the years.
Right.
Alison Krauss and, you know, some people like that. But anyway, but in January of 2021, then we changed it over to the Tim Raven Band.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, I've had four number ones off of my third project, which I'm very, very proud of. And I wrote all the songs on that record.
Wow, that's cool. So what led you initially to put the Merle Monroe Band together after being more or less out of the music, or at least out of that part of it for a while?
Well, I knew that I knew that I was going to retire early, and I was about a couple years away from retiring.
From your
I retired early
from your career,
from my business,
mm-hmm.
yeah, career, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then I just wanted to kind of, you know, fiddle around with music. You know,
mm-hmm.
I just it's something that I love doing, and I kind of got the writing bug, and then, you know, Rhonda Vincent had kept one of my songs. Third Time Out has cut one of my songs. Dave Atkins has cut one of my songs. I mentioned
mm-hmm.
Marty a minute ago. Then I wrote a song for the Tennessee Bluegrass Band called I'm Warming Up to an Old Flame.
Mm.
They cut it, and that did very, very well for them. That was a breakout song.
Mm.
And then
That's
I have
cool.
a couple other songs in the pipeline with other artists now. So I kind of got the writing bug.
Yeah.
And I just want to kind of do that for a while.
Yeah.
And then just kind of, you know, just create music, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
And so just, you know, so I've been loving it. I've just been, and I love bluegrass. It's not the highest paying music there is, but there's a lot of, you know, gratification in it.
Sure, yeah, and it's just the family aspect of it, the family feel that you get with the band,
yes.
and the interaction with the bands, with the fans, and all of that. Just it makes it a really fun genre of music to be around, whether you're a player or just a fan or have some other avenue that keeps you involved.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
So you are now working on a new album, releasing singles, or releasing singles, working on a new album? What's the?
Well, we have one more single left on this current record, and that'll come out probably, I would think, sometime in June or July. And it's called I Can Get Used to This. Will be the single coming out right now. Can't Get Away From This Broken Heart is my current single, and I think it may be right now my most charted song ever.
Wow, that's awesome!
It went number one. Well, it went to number six, and then it went to number one. Then it went back down to 13. Then went back to number one. Then it stayed at number two for 2 weeks, and then went to number six. It went back to number four. Now I think it's at number five this week.
Hmm.
So it's a song that's going to, I believe, hang on for a while. You know, as an artist and as publishing goes, even though a song may never go number one, if it stays on the charts a very long time, you can profit very well off of it.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
this song is one of those songs. It's just hanging on, and I'm very grateful to all the DJs and people like you that play my music,
yeah.
that kind of keep it out there. Like Hello Sunshine was number one for 7 weeks
yeah.
in a row. And now Leaving Town Tonight was number one for 6 weeks in a row, but then it was gone. And Hello Sunshine was the same way.
Mm.
You think, well, gosh, damn it, 7 weeks, you know, but then it was gone.
Mm-hmm.
This one has been around longer, and it's just, and I think it has a lot more life left in it.
Mm.
That's and, you know, Greg, you know, Greg, really what you want is you really want other bands picking up and start singing your songs.
Sure, yeah.
Because that keeps the life of those songs forever.
Right. And what a compliment, too. When
it's the greatest compliment in the world, Greg.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's great. So these are from which album, then? What's the name of the album that these songs that you're talking about now are coming from?
Yeah, it's called I Can Get Used to This. It's the current project I'm working on right now.
That's the album that's currently out that these singles are being released from.
That's correct, yes. Uh-huh.
And how far ahead? So are you already thinking about the next project? Do you?
I am, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. Yeah, thanks for mentioning. Matter of fact, I'm not going to write so many for this next project. I will probably start this sometime in the fall.
Uh-huh.
But there's some songs that I've always wanted to sing. And so I'm going to write some for it, but probably the majority of the songs will be cover songs.
Mm, okay.
I've always been a big Roger Miller fan. I mentioned Dennis Lindy a minute ago. Mm-hmm. Dennis Lindy, great writers. Don Gibson, big fan of Don Gibson.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been a big Ronnie Millsap fan.
Mm, so some good old classic country.
Yeah, but, you know, kind of like Bob and Sonny did back in the 70s, where they would take current country at that time and turn them into bluegrass.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, what's funny is, like, when we were growing up and we would hear their songs, we thought they did it. We didn't know that Mel Street did that song.
right, yeah.
We didn't know that Merle Haggard did that song. We thought the Osmond Brothers did it.
Yeah.
Well, that's some of those type of songs that just will stand the test of time. They'll always be great songs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try to cover them and see how that goes for me. Jim Reeves, I'm a huge Jim Reeves guy too. I love his music. He doesn't equate as well to bluegrass as the other artists I mentioned,
mm-hmm.
but still some of his songs are very conducive to bluegrass. Mm-hmm. And I picked a couple that I really want to do. And now I'm really looking forward to getting started on it.
That's great. Will you be out with the band this summer, the fall?
Not this year. Mm-hmm. I've taken some time off this year. I had a little trouble with COVID. I had some respiratory things going on where I would sing for about an hour, then I would start getting real hoarse. Now I have worked through that. I don't have those same side effects now,
mm-hmm.
but I was scared to book anything, you know, like in the first part of the year for the summer, because I was still going through that, and I didn't want to book something and cancel it.
Sure.
Didn't want to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm more looking forward to 2024 and getting ramped up for 2024. I think I'm past that now.
Well, you will certainly have lots of good music to take out on the road with you when you get there, that's for sure.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that very much.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to tell me your story, Tim. I learned some things I didn't know and got to know the history behind what brought you here so far. And man, I wish you well with it. I'm glad you're going to get back out on the road and looking forward to the new project you're getting ready to work on, too. So I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today.
Well, thank you, Greg. It was a great honor and pleasure to speak with you, and I really appreciate you so much.
Hey, thank you. You're welcome, and we'll hope to see you here out on the road soon.
You bet. Take care.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Frunino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.